Today on The Verge Cast, Chris Welch and Monica Chin join Dieter and I to talk about the week at CES and the Samsung Galaxy S21 event. Got new TVs, new laptops, new phones, all coming up now on The Verge Cast.
Support for today's show comes from Deloitte. What does the future look like? By melding business acumen and innovative technology, Deloitte can help you build the future only you can imagine. They can help engineer solutions for your business reality today and your vision for tomorrow to get you to a world where you don't just dream it, you build it. See how you can engineer advantage with Deloitte at Deloitte.com/US/engineering advantage.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hello and welcome to Vergecast, the flagship podcast of consumer electronics.
Actually, it is. That's literally what we do.
That's what we promised. I don't know if that's what we've been delivering recently. To Vergecast this week. We did one earlier in this week with Casey and Addy talking about what's happening across the social platforms with moderation, president, tech policy, did the COVID update in that one. Go listen to that. That is a huge and ongoing story that we're going to be covering very deeply. But concurrent to that, because it cannot be stopped, CES happened. Just a freight train barreling through the night. Anyway, I'm Neil Patel. I'm your friend. I'm here. Dieter Bohn is here.
I'm the tenor in your sea shanty.
That's good. Are you a tenor?
I don't know.
All right. And to help us talk about CES, Chris Welch is here.
Hello again.
And Monica Chin is here.
Hey, what's up?
Dieter, CES is like a, I don't know. I don't know how to describe CES this year. We're not in Las Vegas for the first time in like a decade. You and I aren't in Las Vegas. I'm not hungover.
Strange.
Which is weird. It's just weird to feel normal. I'm just drinking coffee. That's what's happening right now. Samsung was not at CES.
At all. Well, they had TVs, but yeah.
Just describe how CES has operated this year and this other Samsung event that happened.
So it was all virtual. We did have some people in New York did get to go look at some stuff. In particular, Chris got to go and look at, I think, some TVs. And Monica, you got to go see a laptop in Samsung space. But everything was like half-hour keynotes. There were a couple of one-hour like presentations. There were a lot of just pictures and press releases, a lot of GIFs. What's weird is it feels incredibly different to us in this podcast. But I think for people that don't actually go to Las Vegas, it was like just like about maybe the same, honestly, because if you don't go, you just see pictures and videos and we talk about the stuff. We just didn't get the benefit of being able to like physically hold or look at a bunch of the stuff that we've been writing about, which is a bummer. The other thing I'll say, everyone's like, is it an up year or down year for CES? And, you know, CES is dying, blah, 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 blah. All that's true. I still believe that CES is a show where you learn about what is going to happen in consumer electronics over the next 24 months, not where you learn about the thing that you're going to buy tomorrow. And that is why it feels so disappointing to people, is people have been set up to believe that you see a tech keynote and then you go buy the product right away from Apple and Samsung and Microsoft and everybody else. And that's just never what CES has been. But I don't want to be like a CES apologist. It was like not the best year. We have about the same amount of big announcements, but there's just no long tail. Like once we tell you about the top 10 things here, normally at CES, there's another 500 things.
Yeah.
And this year, there's like another six.
Yeah. I think last year we did like 10 minutes on a backpack. Like,
yeah.
maybe that's like for the best. But I'm curious. People should tweet at us and get at us about, I mean, obviously, there's another whole distracting news cycle going on in this country. But that note that like for most people, it just feels like pictures of laptops. And it doesn't matter if we were there in person or whether the companies just sent us pictures of laptops. Like, I'm curious how that felt for the people paying attention. Anyhow, so we're not going to start with CES. technically. We should start with the Samsung and the Galaxy S21. It's out. There's another Galaxy S phone. It has the S21 Ultra has five holes on the back.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know how else to describe the design of this phone. It's starting to look like Lytro concept phones with like 16 cameras. We're headed in that direction.
Yeah. So the S21, the Ultra, the story with the Ultra, it's another big Samsung phone. It has four cameras on the back, two telephoto and ultra wide and a wide, plus another hole for a laser sensor. It's got a selfie camera. It's like the Ultra phone. We should talk about the fact that it's black, which is apparently
the video. I want everyone to stop listening to this and then go watch the video Samsung made to talk about how black their phone is.
When it comes to design, black isn't just a color. It's all colors in one. It's bold, yet understated. Black is classic, style, luxury, elegance itself.
My belief is they made that video knowing people would dunk on it.
Oh, for sure. My belief is somebody in Samsung HQ said, we're making a Vanta Black phone. Go buy Vanta Black. And they went to go buy Vanta Black and they're like, oh shit, this is really expensive and really hard to make. Yeah. And so then they decided to do knockoff Vanta Black and they made a whole video about it. And then they called it Phantom Black, which if you're not listening closely.
I didn't even think about it.
Sounds exactly like Vanta Black.
Did not even think about that. Vanta Black, if you haven't been paying attention to the, I don't know, it's the blackest black. It is a material that absorbs light. It is very hard to use. It's very expensive. There's like patent trolling associated with it. It's like a whole thing. So Samsung made Phantom Black, which is very funny. But I think they made a parody of an Apple video so people would dunk on it and pay attention to it.
Oh, for sure.
That's my theory of this video. Anyway, so the Ultra is Phantom Black. What are the rest of the S21s?
So the actual story, the real story with the S21 this year is, the Ultra is the Ultra, it's $1,200, but the regular S21 starts at $799 now, and the S21 Plus is a $999. So they brought the prices down a little bit, which is fascinating because last year at the S20, they realized that, oh, wait, we need a cheaper phone. So they made the S20 FE, which we actually really liked. But it means that if you're looking at the S21, it is not the sort of thing that you can get with, say, the iPhone or previous years of the S20, where you just like, you decide you want the new flagship phone and then you pick the size that you want and pop, 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 you're done. And you don't have to worry about the details that much. You actually do have to worry about the details quite a bit. The regular S20 is a polycarbonate back instead of glass. The regular S21 is a polycarbonate back instead of glass. The S21 and the S21 Plus have a different camera system, which normally it's like whatever, like we don't know. But we think, we hope that this year on the S21 Ultra, Samsung fixed its 108 megapixel camera. With the S20 Ultra, it was a big whiff. With the S21 Ultra, it's a new generation of the sensor. And Samsung has promised me that they have fixed their demosaicing or their remosaicing, and they fixed, some of their face filter stuff and, Samsung camera promises. But what it means is if you do want one of these phones, you actually need to like think about it a little bit about how big you want to go, but also what features you want. Speaking of features, you will not get MST, the cool like magnetic credit card thing in the US. You also...
Really?
Yep, that's gone. There's no micro SD card slots anymore on the Samsung phones, so say goodbye to that. And, there's no AC adapter in the box.
Is the MST thing just like NFC one? Right, because MST was a thing where it like faked out a card reader.
Right, yeah, so you still get NFC, of course, but I think that, I don't know, they're just saving a buck or whatever.
That was like the coolest part of Samsung Pay.
I'm not sure why anybody's going to use Samsung Pay anymore once that's gone.
Right, it worked everywhere because it faked out the regular reader, as opposed to like the sort of like hit or miss NFC experience that exists.
Yeah.
Oh well.
I will say that NFC is more hit than miss for me most of the time now. I can use an NFC payment system 90% of the places I go.
Yeah, you live in San Francisco. Well, here in the woods, where I only go to two stores, 50% hit rate for me on NFC.
Yeah. Well, you have to pay with like bear pelts, right? That's what you do.
Yeah. I actually have to go hunt some bears after this in order to feed my family. So the line is getting more complex. And then Nate, this is like the weirdest thing to pay attention to, but we went S, you know, Galaxy S3, Galaxy S4, Galaxy S10, Galaxy S20.
Right. We skipped 9 Galaxy S's.
And then now we're at 21.
Right.
They just don't care, do they?
Well, it matches the year, right? And it also it keeps them from having this weird TikTok with the numbers on the iPhone. I think that's what their real goal was. They just wanted to like get away from that and not have that tension.
Oh, I see.
Which, sure.
Do we have them, right?
Yeah. So there's a review embargo, but I can give you some impressions. I have the S21 Ultra and I also have the regular S21. The S21 Ultra is, in fact, very black. I'm not going to give you camera impressions. I have some thoughts, but I'm going to be really coy about it because I haven't taken quite enough pictures to feel confident. But yeah, I'm more optimistic than I was with the original S20 Ultra, which you could tell right away was problematic. And, you know, it's a Samsung phone. It's a big-ass Samsung phone. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. I like that they changed the design of the camera bump.
Oh, yeah. So the rail around the side, it's curved. And so the S21 Ultra does have a slightly curved screen, whereas the regular S21 and S21 Plus are flat. Chris is shaking his head because why are they doing curved screens? It's not that bad. And I will say, it's not that bad. I will say that I went out and bought myself a iPhone 12 Pro Max because I've got to do head-to-head camera comparisons and also just big phone comparisons. The S21 Ultra is way better to hold than the iPhone 12 Pro Max. Just straight up, it's better. It's a little bit narrower. The sides have that Samsung curve to it. The weight just feels slightly easier to handle. Yeah, it's just like that, those extra little millimeters wider that the iPhone is, and like the extra little millimeters of the bezel that you can see on the front compared to this, the curve here that lets it be narrower. It actually matters.
Can I give everybody a window into what working with you is like? Dieter slacks me. I didn't wait for him to say yes. Dieter slacks me and he's like, I think I need the 12 Pro Max to compare the Ultra to. And I was like, oh, I'll send you the review unit. And like by the time I was done typing, he's like, that'll be too slow. I bought one.
Yeah, I mean, you know. Going from the Mini to the Max, by the way, is a real... Oh, sorry. We haven't even mentioned the Ultra supports the S Pen, and there's a new line of S Pens that are separate accessories.
I feel like the S Pen conversation in a normal time in American history, like we would have done an hour on like Samsung's product line and what does it mean for the S Pen to come to the Galaxy S line.
Well, it's Wacom support. They've implied that they're going to allow third-party S Pens. It's a whole thing.
And wither the Note.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, there's also a coup, so I think the Note's going away. Like, I don't know. Like, it's very hard to get worked up about the future of the Galaxy Note. I think it's interesting that Samsung's going to lean into the stylus finally, like all the way across its line. That's the thing they can do that I think Apple will never do with its phones.
Yeah.
So,
well, this is my whole thing with Samsung. Samsung, maybe they're doing it with the stylus. It's only on the Ultra. But Samsung is so bad at realizing the things that it makes that are good and keeps on focusing on making bad versions of stuff that they're jealous of. And A1 of this trend is Bixby, but we could also do it with fitness. They made a whole like TV-based fitness thing to compete with Apple Fitness where the camera like watches your body. I'm sure it's fine, but it's like it's a knockoff, right? Meanwhile, they've got the stylus stuff. They've got Dex, which I know it's been around and whatever, but like wireless Dex is genuinely cool now. And just on and on and on. And I just wish Samsung would be Samsung instead of trying to be like medium Apple.
Be yourself.
Yeah.
The Samsung story. Well, you know how Samsung is extremely itself.
How's that?
It's with the Galaxy Buds, which are very much not like AirPods at all. Chris, you reviewed the Galaxy Buds this week. How are they?
Yeah. For $200, they're Samsung's best earbuds yet. They sound the best of them. I mean, they're not quite on par with like the best of the best of true wireless earbuds, but they also don't cost as much as the best of the best. But yeah, some of the features are clearly inspired by the AirPods Pro. They have 3D audio for movies. I couldn't test that because it only works on the Galaxy S21 right now, of course. And now they can actually switch between your Samsung devices, just like the AirPods Pro can switch between your Apple devices. So those two things are pretty close. But Samsung actually has a pretty clever thing where if you talk, it'll actually turn down the volume of your music by itself, and then it'll go into the ambient sound mode. And so you just start talking, and that just happens instantly. So if you're at like the coffee shop and you just want to pay for something, it's pretty handy. Sony's done that on its 1000XM4 headphones, but this is the first time that I've seen it on actually some earbuds. So
what if you're listening to music and you start singing?
If you talk to yourself, it happens too. Or sing. Yeah. Like, so if you're someone who often speaks to yourself, you will hear yourself.
You'll just be reminded that you're extremely awkward.
Yeah.
If you start talking and it turns off it goes into transparency mode and turns down the music so you can hear somebody else reply to you. Mm-hmm. How long does it stay in that mode? Or like if someone's talking to you, do you have to every now and then go like, but to keep them in transparency mode? How long does it stay?
So it waits for you to stop talking and you can choose between 5, 10 or 15 seconds for the time frame for it to stop.
I usually like to listen to people for more than 15 seconds. It's just me.
No.
You just got to say like, mm-hmm, or some kind of like vocal
the
thing.
Samsung tells me you need to cut them off. They've been talking too long.
Wait, so the timer re-ups every time it hears you talk?
Yeah.
All right. I don't know. I have very mixed feelings about this as somebody who mumbles to himself all the time. Like, I don't need to be reminded that I'm just quietly talking to myself all the time. The switch between Samsung devices automatically, that's a Samsung proprietary feature?
Yeah. Yeah, so that only works on Samsung phones and tablets. It does not work on Samsung laptops, which is kind of where it loses to the AirPods Pro, since those will work on your Mac and your iPad and your iPhone. So there's one thing missing from that setup, but... yeah, I mean, it seems like Samsung's kind of trying to lean in on its whole ecosystem of gadgets and phones. And so it's very Apple-ish, but most of the features do work on all phones. But they actually don't support the iPhone anymore, which is kind of wild.
They just don't support the iPhone.
It'll work, but there was an app for the past earbuds where you could like change the settings and do all that stuff. And that actually just does not work on these earbuds anymore. So for some reason, they just kind of left the iPhone behind on this one. I guess they kind of know that there's probably not too many people using these with their iPhone, but
that's a real imagine the meeting moment, right? Where they're yeah. they're doing the development chart and there's like iPhone app is like one box in the flow chart and they get to it yeah. and they all just look at it and they're like, we know, right? And then like someone
it's
like,
time to
you hear the clicking on Zoom and the box disappears, like it just goes away. In the Android truly wireless earbuds world, there's always the what is the one true alternative to the AirPods? Are these them?
I think so. I mean, these are them. I think the Jabra 85Ts are still a good choice. The Bose QuietComfort earbuds are good as well. Those are kind of like platform agnostic, whereas these really do kind of target the Samsung customer more. But even if you have like a Pixel or some other phone, I think these will do you pretty well. The noise cancellation isn't the best, but it's fine. I mean, it cuts out like a decent chunk of the outside noise. And so, yeah, sound quality is satisfactory, not mind-blowing, but these are $200 versus like $230 for the AirPods Pro or $250 and $270 for the Bose as you go up from there. So not a bad package and all. So
I'm noticing that you're wearing the AirPods Max right now, Chris.
They're good for monitoring on a podcast.
All right, well, we burned through the phones. That's because, as Dieter said, we will have a review soon, and we'll probably devote a lot of time, one presumes that we will eventually review these phones. So we'll come back when we do that. We'll spend way more time in the S3 ones. Need to talk about them because they had this week. We're gonna take a break, come back, talk about what happened at CES, starting with some TVs. We'll be right back.
Support for today's show comes from Deloitte. Here's the story of innovation told in 5 words. Try. Explore. Connect. Pivot. Transform. See what happened there? As soon as Connect entered the story, innovation became achievable. That's why Deloitte works with clients and tech alliances to bring together the people, ideas, and technologies to overcome, solve, and of course, transform. Connect to what matters for innovation. Start at Deloitte.com/US/innovate.
Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within art, beats, and lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari, W., and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu.
Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
All right, we're back. Chris. HDMI 2.1.
We told you to wait before you buy your next TV, and now you know why.
we saw this train coming. Actually, kind of like a lot of TV news at CES this year.
Yeah.
Like, my frame for it is that 4K HDR is now the commodity product. Like, that's just table stakes. Like, we're done talking about it.
Yeah.
Every TV has it. It's cheap to make. It's everywhere. So now we got to do something else. And that feels like 2.1. It feels like better display technology,
right?
And to some extent 8K, which please stop. Can we just wait? Can we just hold on? But let's start with Samsung. We've been talking about Samsung. A couple of big things from Samsung this year, right?
Yeah. So I went in person to actually go see their new TV lineup, which felt like the old times. And so their new LCD sets use what's called a mini LED. So the best LCD TVs today use what's called full array local dimming, where they have like a few dozen lights behind the display to kind of light up and dim based on what's on screen. And so mini LED just kind of goes beyond that idea and makes them much smaller and just crams in a ton more. So for LG, they're also using this tech, and they're putting up to 30,000 of these LEDs in their TVs. So it's a big difference, and it lets the TVs kind of have much better control over contrast. And if there's like a bright thing on screen, you won't get any kind of like halo or the blooming effect you can sometimes see on LCD TVs. And so Samsung's look really, really nice. Saw them in person. And they also have this new game settings menu. So like if you have like a PS5 or an Xbox, you can just kind of shortcut your way to seeing all the key settings there, like VRR and eARC and that sort of thing. So yeah, it's not like a world of difference over last year's TVs, but they do look better and they do look nicer. And I kind of want one. So
so mini LED is a backlight technology,
right,
with the thousands of LEDs behind the screen to light up.
Yes, and micro LED is like the holy grail next big TV technology from what people hope.
Right. Micro LED is the one where they make like segmented TVs. You can make them any shape and size you want, right?
Right.
And we're just not there yet.
Not quite there yet. Samsung did announce a 110-inch version of their micro LED TV. No. So it's no longer modular. It's still going to be extremely prohibitively expensive for anybody, I think. But yeah, now they are putting that into like a more standard form factor. But yeah, that's like the next great hype machine is micro LED, because it has like most of the best things about OLED, self-lit pixels, and it shouldn't have burn-in or any of the downsides that OLED has. But for now, I think the best TVs that most people will buy this year are going to be the mini LED side of things.
Can I just point out, Samsung also spent a decent amount of time in its keynote on new accessibility settings and options. My favorite of which was you can change the size of the ASL translator in the lower right-hand corner and like embiggen that little portion of the screen so that you can see it more easily. Mm-hmm. I think that's great. I think that with some of those features, they're just doing it for the feel-good headlines. But if you improve accessibility settings, I don't care what your motives are. I think it's great.
Sure. Yep, there was that. And there was also, there's a new remote that comes with some of these TVs. It's an eco remote. It's made from recycled plastic, and it uses solar power to recharge the battery inside. So instead of constantly swapping for AAAs, you just put it on your table and it charges up and stays that way for a few years. So that's pretty neat.
I think this is dumb. I think this is the dumbest thing.
Different takes on the Vergecast, everybody.
Look, how much carbon does it take to make a solar panel system for a remote? Like, how expensive is that environmentally to make?
Six.
Compare that's a six.
I don't know.
It's a six. I bet you over the lifetime of a remote, the triple A's that you would need to swap out and the amount of environment numbers that it would take to make those triple A's is probably a three. Because there's billions of them are made a year. Everyone knows how to make them. These remotes, like, it lasts 3 years on a charge anyway, from the solar panel. I just think that they did this because, ooh, it's blah, blah, blah. Like, good on you for making it recycled. But I just don't think that when it comes to the carbon footprint that Samsung has, that its remotes are remotely important.
I think that that is probably fair. I was more thinking how much sunlight is in my...
Oh, it charges. It does the internal solar panel thing that a lot of, you know, solar, quote unquote, solar gadgets do. So if you've got incandescent bulbs, it will survive. And again, like, it doesn't need much. It's a remote, so like it will last a long time.
Yeah, actually, we haven't done a deep dive on the remotes of CES, right? Because Samsung has its TV software. LG updated its remote this year. The proliferation of like service specific buttons is getting out of hand on all these remotes. Like, we started with a Netflix button and we're down to like a Crackle button.
Yeah, the remotes are changing. I think for the first time, LG put on like the usual Netflix buttons and Prime Video. And more important to LG, though, is they made some pretty big software changes to WebOS, or if we can still call it that.
So there's Samsung. Mini LED is great. Like, I never wanted to buy an LCD TV before. Mini LED is like, I got to go see it. It's very hard to judge from photographs. Like, I miss being at CS just to look at the TVs and see what they're like with my own eyes. Even though at CS, they're all in like blindingly bright mode. But, you know, I want to see it. I'm excited about it. It feels like, okay, they're starting to compete. On the flip side, LG, right, they're still pushing ahead with OLED and they've upped their software. So let's talk about what LG did.
Yeah. So they've got, there's a new OLED panel in their G1 series, and it's their brightest panel yet. That's always been like the main downside for OLEDs, is they don't get quite as bright as LCDs. They are gorgeous and stunning, but if you like put them in a bright room, they might be a little bit underwhelming. And so LG says this new G1 series can get brighter. They aren't really saying how much brighter than past models, but it seems like they're trying to like get over that hurdle, that hump for OLEDs as they keep pushing forward. But like I said, they also have some mini LED TVs if you want that as well. So they're trying to like toe this line where they say, well, these mini LED TVs are awesome, but still not quite as good as OLED, which is the ultimate in picture quality. And there's a new bigger size of OLED. I think it's 83 inches. And so both LG and Sony have giant OLED TVs this year. So I'm pretty happy about that and very jealous of anybody who gets one of those.
Dieter, tell me about this new version of WebOS.
So they have made it just like a bog standard smart TV interface where it's like you hit the home button and you see a big home screen with a bunch of tiles, some of which happen to be ads. Mm-hmm. And then, as mentioned, there's more buttons on the remote. I don't know if Beanbird is still around. We got to see. But
can you just tell people what Beanbird is?
Beanbird was a little bird shaped like a bean that would help you understand how your smart TV worked. And it like bounced around and did things. And like you could like see it hanging out on a beach when you were done setting it up. And that was cute. The original version of WebOS on TVs, it had like this blade system where you'd hit the home button and then you would see all your options across the bottom and you could like run through them that way, and it had a little pointer or whatever. So I tweeted, I didn't tweet the thing I should have tweeted, which was, look how they massacred my boy. But I did say I was very sad about it. And everyone replied with the correct meme. So thank you, everybody, for that. And one person did reply saying that they were on the original team and they fought tooth and nail. And it was a huge battle to get the original version of WebOS with the blades and like the whole like new idea about how a smart TV should work. LG didn't want to do it. And the team that made it was like, no, trust us. This is good. And it was good. And then everyone liked it. And then some time passed and everybody moved on. And LG said, just kidding. We want some more ads. And now we have the new version of WebOS.
Yeah. I think that, you know, we did the whole HDMI 2.1 show and we had Bill Baxter from Vizio on it. And he was just pretty blunt. He's like, most of our customers don't even need the inputs anymore. Everyone just uses our software to watch streaming services. We're unavoidable. And you gotta pay us. That was the word he used, was unavoidable.
Yeah.
He's like, particularly for a company at the scale of Vizio or Samsung, like, there they are. Like, yep, they're running the software. If you want to put your service on it, like, you got to pay them.
Who's the bad guy who says, I'm inevitable?
That's Thanos.
Thanos, yeah. The smart TV software is the Thanos of your software life.
I'm willing to buy that conceptually. I will say Bill Baxter as a person is the opposite of that personality. But yeah, I this is like the push, right? Like, why is HBO Max and Peacock not on Roku? Because Roku is like, we're unavoidable. You got to pay us to be here. and they haven't solved that problem. That is the case with Samsung. That's the case with every other smart TV operating system you can think of. And so I think LG was like, oh, we should be more unavoidable. And what we're sad about is like their old system was extremely avoidable. Like I have an LG smart TV. I never use that stuff. I don't even look at it. So I guess such is the future. Chris, Sony did some stuff. Speaking of smart TV software, they've switched over to the new Google TV stuff, right?
Yep. So their TVs are going to ship with that software on board. And now they are actually all going to have the full HDMI 2.1 suite of features. So the company behind the PlayStation 5 is now ready for the PlayStation 5 just a few months later. But their TVs look great. They are not doing any of the fancy new screen tech like mini LED. They're still doing just usual full array, but their TVs are great. And they also do OLEDs. And so, yeah, they've got both of those options for you.
So Sony stuff may not be that exciting, but Google TV is like really good. I've been using it and I'm glad they're upgrading for Android TV to it. I'll also say, even if you think Sony stuff is boring, all is forgiven because they're making a drone that carries alpha cameras, is designed for it. And that's very exciting.
That's cool. I would say there's also some amount of pure opportunism in that announcement because DJI is banned from the United States. So if you're Sony and you're already the like one of the biggest providers of broadcast technology and everyone's DJI drones don't work anymore, you're like, what's up? Yep. Like, do you like at the bottom of your like $5 million NFL contract shopping cart, it's like, would you like to add a drone? And like,
yeah,
you just go for it.
You think that they started development on that the day that ban happened? They're like, oh shit, let's get this done.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Get the CES teaser ready, everybody.
Yeah. But I appreciate opportunism. So
there's also a new streaming service from Sony called Bravia Core.
This, I don't understand this at all.
That promises to stream at near 4K Blu-ray quality. And so it's pretty bold.
It promises to explode your data cap. You're going to watch 10 minutes of a movie and the police are going to come to your house and take your SIM card away. So it promises to stream at extremely high quality, like,
mm-hmm.
Current 4K stream is what, like 18 to 20 megabits a second, and a Blu-ray is like 100 to 200, right?
Yeah.
Somewhere up mm-hmm. there. So a massive jump in data being transferred to your house, more quality. All that's great. It does not seem like what you can do is just sign up for it and go. You get like vouchers when you buy a TV.
Yep. So you buy a Sony TV, you get some vouchers to get some movies that you keep, I think. And then there's also like a free streaming section where you kind of hop in. But it does seem like this is only available to Sony customers. Look,
they're just,
and I assume it's only Sony movies from their studio, I would imagine. But yeah, if you really want to watch Bad Boys for Life in pristine 4K quality, this is what you've been waiting for.
It is one of the most Sony announcements ever. Like, extremely proprietary format, only for their products, impossible to purchase. Like, it is the memory card of 4K streaming. I don't know what else to say about it, but it's great. I love it. And then lastly, we've been talking about smart TV software. Roku announced it's the biggest selling smart TV OS. That's obviously on there. The biggest selling smart TV OS in North America. That's obviously on their, you know, line of somewhat inexpensive boxes, but on TCL TVs, TCL has become a player because of Roku, but they announced more TVs are trying to get bigger than being the commodity Roku TV provider. It seems like.
Yeah. I mean, they said we're going to be everything's going to be 8K within like some period of time. It's like, okay guys, great. But they also, this was supposed to be the year that TCL went from like, we're trying really hard, guys, pay attention to us, to like, no, we are serious. We are going to supplant LG in the hearts and minds of American consumers. They wanted to do it on phones. They want to do it on TVs. They wanted to go big. And I think the fact that they couldn't have a gigantic installation booth to like intimidate everybody hurt them. But that's what they wanted. This was, they puffed their chest out about mini LED. They had a bunch of new phones. They had a bunch of concepts. And so I think they're going to continue to be like the go-to brand for value TVs this year. But I do not know if I believe them when they say that they're going to have really great high technology TVs. And I also don't care about 8K yet. And I know I should, but I don't. And maybe
TCL's promise is we're going to put 8K across the line, right, Chris?
Yeah, I hope that promise doesn't really lead to higher prices. So I'm kind of worried about that aspect of it. But yeah, they're on their third generation of a mini LED. So they are kind of saying, well, what took you so long, Samsung and LG? So they're kind of, like Dieter said, beating their chest about that. So hopefully the new 6 Series 8K will be around the same price as before. I don't know what content you're really itching to watch at this point as ever. But yeah, so we should know.
Yeah, it's a weird place for them to go. One of my favorite, this is like the dumbest meme that's going around, but Fox has started using like a YouTuber rig during NFL games. Right, it's just a Sony A7R on a gimbal. It looks cool as hell, but it has super shallow depth of field. And everyone to the tweets about it is like, I love Fox's new 8K camera. And I'm like, there's a part of me before the fall of the Republic where I would like spend my Sundays on Twitter being like, no, we wrote about this. It's just shallow depth of field. And now I'm like, the government is falling apart. It's like a different mind frame for Twitter. But I think like the 8K, people don't know what it is. So you can just like glue on any expectations. And so TCL will have one bigger number in the store than everyone else. I think that's actually important to them. But we'll see how it goes. Okay. That's TVs. It's a lot of stuff. Also at CES, lots of chip news, lots of laptop news. Monica, take us through that.
Yeah, so the biggest announcement, the one that I'm most excited about, is AMD's Ryzen 5000 mobile processors. The company claims they're going to power 2021's best gaming notebooks. Intel basically said this about their processors too, but I'm more excited about the AMD ones.
Are you saying that you believe one but not the other?
We're going to have to wait and see, but I'm more excited about AMD. You know, we have their whole lineup. They have a bunch of 8-core processors. Intel says they have one coming, but they don't have it yet. So for the moment, the gaming laptops we have that we know about, the majority of them are AMD Ryzen 5000. We also have Intel announced Tiger Lake H, its latest 11th Gen 8 series chips. They kind of talked about their 12th gen chips, which are called Alder Lake, but we don't really know a ton about those. They're coming like much later this year. And then, of course, NVIDIA announced its GeForce RTX 3000 GPUs. So together, the RTX 3000 series and the Ryzen 5000 series are going to be in a dump of gaming laptops that you're going to see over the next few months.
So actually, let's get this this Alder Lake 12th gen thing out of the way, and then we can talk about the stuff that's actually going to be real this year. So but the story with this thing is they're doing some sort of games with the sizes and powers of the different cores to try and make it more competitive with Apple's M1 CPU, right?
Yeah. So these are hybrid. These are going to be hybrid chips, which are, they basically have some cores that are super powerful and some cores that are less powerful. This isn't the first time that Intel has done this. They have a line called Lakefield. One of those is in the Lenovo X1 Fold. But Lakefield processors are sort of intended for mobile devices, that is like really portable devices that are kind of low powered. So the X1 Fold is an example of that. Their claim is that Alder Lake is going to be, you know, much bigger than that. It's going to be in a lot more kinds of devices. There's going to be a desktop one as well. We don't know a ton about like how exactly that's going to work. So for the moment, I'm just treating that as a claim. I have no idea if that's, you know, what that's going to look like.
Yeah. I mean, we've been dunking on Intel for how long? It's been a while, some of which I think is a little bit unfair, but they've got another new CEO coming, which is named Pat Gelsinger. He just gave an all hands, and the Oregonian reports that he said to the entire company, and I quote, "We have to deliver better products to the PC ecosystem than any possible thing than a lifestyle company in Cupertino makes."
I get it. Wait, I totally get it. Like, it's a good dunk.
Yeah.
Right? They're all smarting. You got to bring them back. And he's saying, like, our only business is making chips. We should be better at it than a company that does other things.
Yep. The company also makes watches and chips and computer. Yeah.
I don't know that they, like, I think Apple would have a dramatically different view on what it is they make and the importance of its chip division to what it is they make. But I understand why he would say it. Gelsinger, importantly, by the way, was the guy who didn't get the job when they gave it to Bob Swan, like the last CEO.
Right.
Like it was. And so I think the Intel board was like, ooh.
Yeah.
Mulligan.
But it is true. I mean, they're on notice. They need to do a good job this year. They really do.
So what do you think of these 11th gen H series chips?
Yeah. So, I mean, there are only three of them that we have now. And this isn't like a big surprise or anything, but they max out at 4 cores and at 35 watt TDP.
Right.
So they are, you know, when you put them on paper next to the AMD Ryzen 5000 series, they are significantly lower powered and they have half the thread count of AMD's top like 6 chips. So, you know, when it comes to multi-core power and when it comes to TDP watts, AMD is just significantly, from what we have now, AMD is significantly ahead at this point. Intel, you know, their big thing last year was emphasis on single core power, and they did do a lot better in a lot of cases on that. The one we're sort of waiting, though, because they have, Intel says they have an 8-core H series processor coming later. So I think that is sort of that's going to be what AMD has to worry about when it comes. But we don't have details on that yet. At the moment, we only have sort of the lower power stuff.
And then AMD's Ryzen stuff, I mean, it's 7-nanometer, and that's fun. I mean, it's just fun to say that they got there and Intel didn't. But is there anything other than just like they made a faster version that's, you know, that's important this year?
Yeah, so it's Zen 3 now. Most of them are Zen 3. So,
oh, okay.
So Zen 3 is like the new architecture. Not all of the chips are actually Zen 3. Some of the U-series processors are still Zen 2, which is kind of annoying because it's a little confusing. Like, I don't think that most people are going to know to look up, like, is this Zen 2 or Zen 3? So I wish they didn't do that, but...
Can you just briefly tell us what, like, these architectures are and why Zen 3 matters?
It basically, the reason it matters is we have desktop Zen 3 already, and we know that it does much better than desktop Zen 2. So, you know, that means we're pretty optimistic about what Ryzen 5000 Mobile is going to look like. And, you know, obviously we haven't gotten to try them yet, but, you know, when AMD says they're going to be a lot better, I am optimistic about that.
So the way that CES usually goes is we get a bunch of announcements. Oh, there's NVIDIA, but we'll get there. We get a bunch of announcements from chip companies. And then, like, as soon as those chip announcements end or the last one ends, 5,000 laptops get announced. And the big deal this year, I think, is the gaming laptops. We should get to all of them. We're going to. But just... Real quick, maybe not real quick. NVIDIA also had its thing. It was not 6 hours long, which is strange, but they announced a bunch of stuff for laptops, right?
Yep. So is their new RTX 3000 series for laptops. There's the RTX 3070, 3080 that are coming on the 26th, and then 3060 laptops are coming on the 2nd. So they say they're a lot faster, you know, standard stuff. There's a new, they're using Dynamic Boost 2.0 is something I'm excited about. That's a technology that it uses AI to balance power between the CPU, the GPU, and the GPU memory, but it works on like a per frame basis. So that they say that's going to lead to much higher frame rates. I hope so. We're going to see in the next few weeks as we start getting these in.
I mean, the big claim is like you put all this stuff together and it should be possible to buy a reasonable gaming laptop that can do 1440, 90 frames per second, right?
That's that is the hope. Yeah.
Yeah. So these 1,000 laptops get announced. which ones do you care about? I know which ones I'm excited. I'm excited about the one with the with Tiamat on it, with the dragon on it, because, you know, dragons. Anyway, I'll get to that. But which ones actually matter to you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there are a lot. The boring answer that I'll give is the Zephyrus G15, which really looks like last year's Zephyrus G14, but they made it an inch bigger. So it's not like there's anything like super new or super groundbreaking about it, but I'm really excited to, you know, I think that I basically thought last year that if the Zephyrus G14 had been the Zephyrus G15 or had been a 15 incher, it would have been like by far the best 15 inch gaming laptop out there. And that's a really competitive field. I mean, yeah. There's the Razer Blade 15. There's like a million MSI things. So I think the Zephyrus G15, if it's like the Zephyrus G14, which all signs say it is just going to be really, really good. And that's going to have AMD processors and NVIDIA processors as well. Another thing I'm really excited about is Asus announced a bunch of new ZenBook Duos, which are dual screen laptops that have like
keyboard in the front club.
Yeah, the keyboard in the front club. They have one primary screen, then they have like a secondary screen and the keyboard deck. So they have a bunch of those coming out. And I'm always just really excited to see like how they're trying to convince us to actually use a dual screen format when form factor, when it adds so much to the price and puts the keyboard in the front. So there's those are going to have those have gotten spec bumps as well. They now have the NVIDIA 3000 series. Some of them do. And I think in the MSI thing that you meant, MSI has one coming out called the GE76 Raider Dragon Edition. They always do these like things that have silly themes, but I think they're a lot of fun. This one is based on an ancient goddess called Tiamat, who, you know, was supposed to be supremely powerful and vengeful. And they're claiming that their laptop is too. And so the lid of the laptop has a design that I think is very cool. It's engraved. It's inspired by ancient Babylon and has a bunch of dragons on it. So definitely check that one out.
I like that they're finally making like rigorous arguments for why they put dragons on the laptops. Like before they were just like, dragons are the shit. And look, now they're like, let me tell you about the ecosystem of dragons that we're participating
right, in. Exactly.
Also based on the ancient Babylonian goddess Tiamat is the Tiamat from the Greyhawk and Forgotten Realms worlds, the five-headed chromatic dragon goddess, also in Dragonlance, which is where I at first, but she's not named Tiamat there. And it's perfect for a laptop because it's five colors. It's a chromatic dragon. That's the whole point of the thing. And of course you need RGB different colors on your laptop. So like everything is lining up to be perfect on this laptop. I promise you.
We have all been poisoned by like Disney style world building. Like that's what's happening here is like now there's going to be like five streaming Star Wars movies about these laptops. Like,
well, their last laptop that they put out that was kind of like funny like this was it was actually based on a spaceship panel. Like it was a panel that had fallen off of a spaceship, and they had like a guy who worked on Star Wars design it, and it was very cool. A lot of people, it's very controversial. Some people think it's really ugly, but I think it's awesome.
That's great.
Okay, most important question: will anybody who's interested in any of these laptops, whether they're run by AMD or Intel, whatever version of the NVIDIA graphics card they've got in them, be able to buy any of this shit? Will any of it actually be available? Or is it going to be like the story with NVIDIA's graphics cards and all the next gen gaming consoles that just like, they're just going to be sold out for the entire year?
You know, it's so hard to know. I mean, I want to be optimistic and say yes. but it's, you know, I think that, you know, when you look at the desktop GPU shortages that we've had with AMD and with NVIDIA, I don't think we didn't see quite the same shortage of laptops last year. The exception I would say was the Zephyrus G14. That was really impossible to buy. So, you know, I think I'm a little more optimistic that there will be supply of these than, you know, compared to the desktop GPUs. But again, it's a weird year, you know, so it's always hard to say. It's very possible. I do think that the new Zephyrus, it will probably be difficult to buy. If you can get your hands on one of those, definitely do.
Can we briefly talk about this thing that to me is the dream gaming laptop, the thing that we were promised we started getting external GPUs? It's the, what is it called? The Asus ROG Flow, ROG Flow.
ROG Flow X13. So I find this laptop incredibly confusing. what it is it's a 2-in-1, it's a 13-inch 2-in-1.
Okay.
It's Asus ROG, so it's like, it's a gaming company. They're selling it as a gaming laptop. The processor is powerful. It's AMD's Ryzen 5980HS. That's one of the flagships. But the GPU is a GTX 1650, which is an entry-level GPU. I wouldn't say it's like a terrible GPU, like there are worse GPUs, but just paired with that processor, I don't really understand. Like, it's just incredibly outclassed. And, you know, we reviewed a couple laptops last year that tried to pair a 1650 with an H-series, a really powerful H-series processor, and it just didn't give good frame rates, not the frame rates we'd expect from that level of chip. So the way that Asus is trying to get around this is they're bundling it with an external GPU called the ROG XG Mobile, which they say is going to give it desktop performance. So on the one hand, that's cool. I mean, it's cool that you have a 13-inch laptop that with an external GPU could give you desktop performance. That's not something we necessarily expect. On the other hand, the first thing is the price of those two things bundled together is $3,000, which is just, I mean, that's like, for that price, you can get any number of great gaming laptops that have the hardware that you need in them where you don't need an external GPU. You can just play on them, which I think is a big benefit. And the other is just like, I don't know how much I want, like the benefit of a 13-inch gaming laptop, like the reason you would want that, I would think, at least personally, is so that you can like bring it around and play games all over the place. Whereas needing to have an external GPU to do that would not, like, that just to me like defeats the purpose of having it be so portable. So I just, you know, I think it looks like a great laptop. I wish that they were just selling it as a regular laptop with a regular laptop price, because then I would absolutely buy it. I think it's like, it looks awesome. But as a gaming laptop at that price, I'm confused is what I am.
Yeah. I mean, I guess to me, it's like you want the laptop you take to work that's ultralight, you throw on your backpack and not heavy and whatever. And then if you want to play games, you plug in the external GPU. Everything is perfect. But doing that in a 13-inch form factor, I guess you're right. That is a little bit weird, because like, why not get a...
No, you want to be the person at Starbucks who has an external GPU.
Right. Sitting there with an external GPU on your desk, like plugged into the wall. Yeah. Like, I would just rather have a 15-incher that I can bring around with me. It's a little heavier, but I can actually, you know, get really good frame rates on it, like the good frame rates that I want.
Okay, that's gaming laptops. We're gonna go long, everybody. What about, is there any non-gaming laptops that you want to talk about? I love that you called the new Samsung Galaxy Chromebook 2 a regular ass Chromebook, because that's what they made. that's what they did. They gave up. Do you want to talk about that or any other laptops that we saw this year?
Well, it's still like bright orange.
It's still bright orange, but it's like, tell them, Monica.
So the Samsung Galaxy Chromebook 2 is, you know, the title's a little bit misleading because it's not really a sequel to the Samsung Galaxy Chromebook. It is in that it's the second device to literally have the name Samsung Galaxy Chromebook. But it's not like an upgraded version of the Galaxy Chromebook. It is very much a step down in terms of like features that it has, and in terms of price. So it's like half the price of the Samsung Galaxy Chromebook, which I thought the Samsung Galaxy Chromebook was just like too expensive. So I'm glad to see that they got the price down. The base processor is a Celeron, which is a very entry level processor. I wouldn't really recommend that anyone. The model that's $699 has an Intel Core i3, which is a decent processor. But it's still, you know, it's lower power than the Samsung Galaxy Chromebook, which had a Core i5. It's a slightly worse screen. The Samsung Galaxy Chromebook had an OLED, and the Chromebook 2 has a QLED, which is not an OLED, even though the names are similar. And, you know, there's some other things that they took out. Like, there's not like a camera on the keyboard deck anymore. There's not like a stylus garage. They took out some of the like flashy, fancy stuff that the Galaxy Chromebook had. But it still looks similar, and that it's still in that it's still bright red. The screen still is pretty good because it is a Samsung QLED, and those are still pretty good panels. It's a little heavier, so you know there are like some they basically bumped it down in like most areas, but they also bumped it down a lot in price. So I'm optimistic about this Chromebook. It seems like Samsung basically gave up on the like let's make a super premium Chromebook that's really expensive like shtick that they were on last year, and just decided to make like a normal Chromebook that can compete with other Chromebooks at the mid-range price point, which I'm happy about. I'm excited to try this one out.
But it does mean that there's no successor to the Pixelbook. It just does not exist. Samsung tried it last year. They just bombed. And so if you want a premium Chromebook, sorry.
Yeah. There's one that looks kind of promising called the Asus Chromebook CX9, which okay. Asus said has military grade durability.
Oh.
That looks very nice.
Who doesn't need to use a Chrome-based operating system at war?
The one other laptop to mention that I thought was kind of cool is there's a ThinkPad called the ThinkPad X12 Detachable, which is like a Surface Pro type idea. It's a ThinkPad where the screen pops off. And you can use it as a tablet, but it still runs Windows. So I think that's pretty cool, too.
Well, the thing I love about that one is they made a Surface clone, but you can tell it's a ThinkPad immediately. It's like it looks and feels and like you could tell it's a ThinkPad. So like Microsoft wanted people to copy the Surface, and this is a copy of the Surface, but it has its own identity, which I'm really happy about.
Yeah, and I think it's a little similar to the idea of the Lenovo X1 Fold that came out earlier this year, in that there, you know, it's a tablet with a keyboard you can like bring along with you. But I think this one will probably be a little bit more of a practical purchase for people who are looking for that tablet ThinkPad form factor, because it's not $3,000 and the keyboard is actually a real keyboard and not like a tiny toy. so I think that people who maybe like the X1 Fold, but it's just too much right now, could definitely look at this one.
All right. There's so much more at CES. We got to take a break, come back. We're going to talk about some of the wilder concepts we've seen.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast comes from Constant Contact. If you're a business owner, you already know that it's really, really hard to cut through the noise of everyday life. If you want to connect with your customers, you need to break through the noise. You need Constant Contact. Constant Contact is a marketing platform that makes it easy to reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and connect over email, text, social media, and more. Whether you're a marketing guru or just learning the ropes, Constant Contact offers writing assistance tools and automation features that make it simple to say the right thing at the right time. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
All right, we're back. Dieter, this was like your favorite thing at CES.
What?
This mask.
It was the thing I hated the most.
Yeah.
The absolute most when I first saw it. I literally tweeted, no! So Razer has made a mask. It's a concept that has RGB lights, which is what the exciting part. But I was terrified it was going to be COVID profiteering, right? Just like, and it's not actually, it's just a concept mask. It has interesting features. So it will be N95 certified if they do make it. It looks like the mask you're not supposed to wear with like the vents, but that's where the filters are. And then the rest of it is clear so people can see you talking. It has a silicone thing for your nose bridge so it won't fog up your glasses. They're working with THX to put a microphone and a speaker in it so you're not muffled when you speak.
Amazing.
So it's like, it's just like it amplifies your voice. It's great. And it looks dope. And like the lights can light up your mouth in the dark and then you can get other colored lights on it and whatever. To be clear, Razer also changed over one of its manufacturing centers last year and created 1 million like actual masks and donated them to healthcare workers. So like that's the part that actually matters. But yeah, with this thing, I went from, oh God, to like, okay, like, yeah, go ahead and make that. That would be cool. It's much better than some of the other COVID stuff we've seen at CES this year. There's like 1 million UV lights, which, you know, UV lights work, but come on. And then there were a bunch of people saying that you should like buy their temperature sensor and like external temperature sensors on like the IR thing they shoot at your forehead. Not the science on those for like COVID screening is, well, let's just say that no one thinks it works. So
yeah.
There were a few of those where I was like, I wish you hadn't done that. But on the whole, I was expecting it to be a health gadget like catastrophe at CES this year of just terrible COVID related things. And for the most part, that didn't happen. So I'm pretty happy about it.
Yeah. Run us through some of the other concepts we saw at CES.
So LG did rolling things again.
They love to roll.
They love just rolling.
I feel like they built the rolling OLED thing and they're like, where can we put this? And every year there's like a hackathon and they're just like, what if a TV rolled up into this?
Yeah. So it's a rolling phone now. It's called the Rollable. And they say they're going to make it. It'll probably be part of their Explorer project thing, which is what created the LG Wing, which mm-hmm. is the flippy, rotatey, whatever the hell you want to refer to that, the T phone. This thing is going to be, we were worried about folding phones and durability, but like this is going to have a motor. Like, is there going to be anything behind the screen when you roll it up? Are you actually going to be able to touch it and like have it? Like, I'm very dubious that this is actually a good idea to make.
Well, we've learned that flexible screen designs, durability is not the first thing that they check off the list.
Well, TCL also showed off a bunch of rolling things. TCL.
Oh, God.
Go ahead, Chris, please.
Okay. So TCL is showing like some foldable and rolling stuff. And there's this one video where this guy's on a hike and he pulls out this like scroll and unfurls it into like something like straight out of like Minority Report that shows his location and like photos he's taken recently. And so, yeah, not exactly something that we're ever going to get anytime soon. But they did actually show like an actual real world demo of it. But there, it's a static image. It's like nothing resembling what the video showed. But, you know, it's concept-y. It's CES. It's fun to kind of think about. But
what you want when you're on a hike is a scroll that you have to use both hands to open and use both hands to hold it open. And then out in the woods, an incredibly fragile screen, bendable screen that is displaying your stuff on it. And then if you need to interact with it, you know, both your hands are active. So, you know, you just touch it with your nose to like interact with it, just like you do on your Apple Watch. I think that's the idea, right?
Ugh. You need to whip it out.
Just take a paper mat, my man. That's all you needed, you know?
The other thing, so LG, actually, we didn't talk about monitors and all, but like I'm kind of excited about some of this, some of the new monitors this year and supporting HDMI 2.1, using for gaming. But LG showed a TV that bends from flat to curved. And maybe I've been poisoned by CES, but I was like, oh yeah, I want that.
Yeah, no, I get it. I totally get it.
We all dunked on curved TVs for 5 years.
The curved monitors are great.
But like this is like a curved gaming TV. But yeah, like, you know, it's flat when you want it. And then when you want a game, you like put your chair directly in front of it and then you curve it around you and it's great.
Yeah. I feel like everyone needs a gigantic button that says game mode and it, like the TV curves and the lights go down.
Razer actually had a concept where there was like it's a chair, but there's like a screen that folds, rolls around the chair. I don't like quite understand it, but that's an idea they have.
I love that like on the one side, there's like VR, which is expressed best in like the Oculus Quest 2, which is like inexpensive. And on the other side, there's like, what if a TV rolled around your chair and you lived in a video game? And it's like, we're going in two wildly different directions. All right. We got to wrap this up. Any last crazy CES gadgets?
We got to talk about the ice cream pod thing. Cause everyone flipped out about it. It's an ice cream maker that you put a can in. And so it's pod based home ice cream maker. That's the whole thing. But everyone was like, oh my God, I'm so excited for this. Tell me more about it. I don't know. Like my mom sent me a link to this thing and was like, oh, this is great.
I looked up where I could buy it. I'm not gonna lie.
Amazing.
That was awesome.
No, this is like every CS has one, right? Like several years ago, it was like the smart fork.
If you ate too fast, it started vibrating at you. Yeah, yeah. It's called the happy fork.
It's the same as weight shaming people. It's exactly, that's the fork that made you hate yourself. But that was like a viral sensation. It was like the local news gadget. I think the ice cream maker is like this year's CES local news gadget.
Yeah. Keurig but for ice cream is a really good pitch.
Yeah.
The thing is like, it's bigger than your oven. It's so huge.
Worth it. Still down.
Yeah.
All right. Well, CES, it's not quite over. There's going to be a little, I'm still getting the emails.
Not quite over and not quite the same. Miss you, Las Vegas.
Yeah, I have very mixed feelings about not being in Las Vegas right now. They're mostly related to how my body personally feels. But I do miss seeing everybody. I miss playing with a lot of gadgets. I miss taking pictures of weird stuff at CES. So hopefully we're back there next year. But there's, like I said, there's going to be a little bit more news, I think, coming out. Not big news, but just like little stuff coming out. We'll have a bunch of wrap-up stuff. Chris, thank you. Monica, thank you.
No problem.
Thank you.
You can tweet at all of us. Chris Welch is at Chris Welch. Monica is at MC squared 96. Dieter's at Backlon. I'm at Reckless. We love to hear from you. We'll be back next week with another show. That's what we do now. We're back, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
We're already working on next year's holiday spectacular. That's how I'm thinking about it. All right. That's it. Rock and roll.
Wear a mask.
Support for this show comes from Art, Beats, and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Cult Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art Beats and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.